anger expressed by the populace in different parts of the state, but let us consider whether we want to carefully craft a modification of the economic limitation factors that will work, or do we want the people to come in with a referendum and wipe out the whole thing. Consider carefully and vote for this bill.
Mr. Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a couple of observations on the debate and on the bill. I'd like to go all the way back to the long speech that we heard earlier today. It had one phrase in it, or one statement, which I take exception to, and there were several, but I want to focus on one, and that was something to this effect. It said that there was an effort to link this bill and the tax related to this bill to other issues, and that was somehow wrong. Well, Mr. Speaker, I think that a tax issue has to be linked to other issues. Taxes have to exist in a context. It's, in my view, taxes shouldn't exist just for the sake of having taxes. There has to be something that goes beyond it. So with that in mind, and knowing that just about everybody on the floor before we're done today is going to speak on it, I've been keeping track or trying to keep track of the various arguments in the favor of the bill that have been put forward. I found three or four, although maybe there was a fifth that I might touch on, and that was the argument that the other people or industries in the state that were paying much lower taxes were somehow subsidizing the oil industry. But leaving that one aside, the arguments were, one was ownership. There was a question of ownership, and I think it's been touched on that that somehow there's an ownership question here. The way I understand the state revenue structure and the corresponding concept to ownership is royalties. We own royalties. That's what royalties are the state's ownership share. If we want more royalties and more ownership, lease at higher royalties. Or if we want 100% ownership, lease it to ourselves and develop it ourselves, or don't lease it at all. But I'm not sure that taxes is the right way to get at royalties, which in turn gets at ownership. The other two that have been put forward were size of government and profits. I would have a couple of observations on those. One, that I do think that taxes are oftentimes viewed in the context of the size of government. I've sure heard that back home. I believe it is not treasonous to reduce the size and scope of government. I think most people would agree with that. But we have heard that maybe taxes are justified at some level of spending, but not this level. And so I'm not sure that the size of the government is the issue that should make us raise taxes today. The other is on profits. And I sure hope that the impetus behind this bill is not hostility towards profits. A lot of people have talked about that, and I don't want to suggest that all of those who are favoring this bill are doing it out of hostility towards profits. But a few have made that argument, and I take exception to that. I think that profits are okay. It's not something that we should have hostility towards or raise taxes just because of profits. So when I look down through this list, there's three, and a fourth that's been touched on a couple times is one of unfairness, and the issue of unfairness. I can't see how a level of tax is unfair unless it's unfair relative to some hypothetical higher level of taxation. I don't think that, 86% of the state's revenues is unfair because it could have been 88. Or 90, maybe it could have, I'm not sure. When I look down through all those, the ownership, the profits, the size of government, unfairness issues, I haven't found one that's convinced me to vote to raise taxes at this time. There are a few peripheral arguments. We did hear, even in Anchorage, and I don't want to stray too far from the bill, on a couple of smaller taxes for other reasons, perhaps. Those I think we'll debate another day. But in general, a significant tax increase, to me, just isn't justified at this time. Thank you.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to offer just two more to Representative Krieger's list, if I might. Number one is, this bill lowers taxes for more fields than it raises taxes. And I think that's an important point to consider. It is true that it has the effect of increasing taxes on Prudhoe and Kabarak. But for every other field, it either lowers the tax or leaves it the same. It lowers the fields for the two existing fields, Endicott and Lisburn. It cuts severance taxes. It would have the effect of cutting it for four prospective fields, Nyakuk, Point Thompson, Milne Point, and Seal Point, and it leaves taxes unchanged at zero, the six small producing fields at Cook Inlet and the prospective field at West Sac. Another reason is it is actually trying to do what originally ELF was envisioned to do, and that is to reduce taxes on marginal fields. I don't think anyone can successfully argue that Prudhoe Bay or Kabarak, the two largest oil fields in North America, are marginal fields. So another reason is it reduces the effective severance taxes for smaller fields, indeed all other fields except for Kabarak and Prudhoe Bay. One other reason that I would like to offer is just the comparison factor. That is comparing the rate of Alaska's severance tax to the rate of other oil-producing states. As was mentioned by our majority leader, seven of the top 10 oil-producing states have higher tax rates than the state of Alaska does. But another way of saying that, which I think is very, very illustrative, is let's take for a moment the example of moving every oil field in every oil-producing state to Alaska. And let's ask ourselves whether they would be taxed higher or lower than if they were back home in their own state. Well, on a cents per barrel basis, if you moved all the oil fields in the U.S. to Alaska, so that they'd have Alaska's taxes applied to them, there's only one field in the entire lower 48 that would pay a penny of taxes in Alaska. And they're paying taxes in the states in which they are producing. That gives you some indication, I think, of how much the tax break in Alaska is very, very generous, just as it is and as it would be changed in this bill. So another reason that I would offer to the previous speaker is we are very generous with regard to our tax breaks in Alaska, and we still would be under the new ELF bill. And if you compare how we would tax every other field in the lower 48 here in Alaska with how they are being taxed at home, that they wouldn't pay a single cent in Alaska, I think, is a very telling point. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to point out a couple other things that were mentioned in debate. First of all, with respect to Alaska being a poor risk because of our tax structure, because our tax structure is unstable, I guess I'd have to submit that an investment that would return 43% is not all that risky when you look at the return that you get. And with respect to risk, you know, there's when you do the initial development well or discovery well, and then you compare that risk of the discovery well versus development risks in a known reserve, such as Prudhoe Bay and Kabarak, the risk is not that great. You know pretty much what you're going to hit. The decision then is made to prolong the life of the field so that you can get more oil out of that reservoir. Alaska's interest in getting more oil out of that reservoir is so that we can derive taxes to provide for the benefit of Alaskans. what drives the industry's investment in Alaska? What incentives do they have? And before I get to that, when you look at the ELF and how it works, initially the ELF in House Bill 118 increases the taxes on Prudhoe Bay and Kaparuk and decreases it for every other field, or leaves it the same for every other field. And from that point on, it works as an incentive to Prudhoe Bay and Kaparuk because they're declining fields. It works as an incentive to further develop those fields and invest in those fields because the ELF will be reduced by further investments in Prudhoe and Kaparuk. So, and what other incentives does the industry have? Well, Mr. Speaker, we get our value for the oil at the wellhead. The industry has pipeline profits as an incentive, transportation profits as an incentive, and refining and the sale of the refined products as an incentive. And they make currently, when the price of oil goes down and Alaska gets very little at the wellhead, the industry makes up the difference on downstream refining and transportation and others. So the industry has a far greater incentive to maintain development on those fields than does the state. And with respect to whether or not this will leave oil in the ground, the industry makes money on every step of the process. And this industry that can sell their refined products from Alaskan oil overseas at times have argued against allowing us to export our oil. They're trying to keep it, make it work both ways for them in some instances. We had an argument about profit, whether or not profit's bad. I don't think profit's bad. I think profit's good. If we don't allow the industry some profit, they're not going to invest in Alaska. No question about that. But we aren't offering them profit. We're offering them profit on Alaska, and they also get profit from refining Alaska's product, the oil, in other states. With respect to the money that's gone out of Alaska and whether or not that money will be returned or invested in Alaska, they're not going to make that decision based so much on our tax structure as they will on the price of the oil. What they can get, what they can realize from development of those fields as a whole. And so we should give them profits, absolutely. But we also should gain, for the people of this state, for the benefit of this state, a reasonable return. What's reasonable? What's a reasonable profit? Well, 43% return on investment, $42.7 billion is probably more than reasonable profit. And I would submit that this change is almost insignificant by comparison to the value of the fields. And I think that, Mr. Speaker, you've heard some scare tactics about how the industry may leave oil in the ground or how businesses may go out of existence because of this. Well, I think that remains to be seen, but I don't think it's going to have that effect. If you look at Alaska and what kind of incentives we give to industry, and you look at other areas where Alaska is, where the industry is taking dollars that they made in Alaska and investing it, they're getting a far better return in Alaska. Why would they want to go elsewhere? So I would submit to you, Mr. Speaker, that this change was not so onerous as it has been suggested, and it is the right thing to do for the constituency in this state.
Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think there's been a great deal of rhetoric, confusing dialogue, and a certain amount of double talk associated with this whole issue of the ELF. I was looking back at some old Juneau reports, and I came upon an article and some statements by the then candidate Steve Cooper, a candidate for governor. And his comments then on the petroleum policy were, "I'm against new taxes on oil. Industry is entitled to some measure of stability. I've had a hand in adjusting oil taxes in the past, but enough is enough. My major objective is to encourage new competition, and you don't do this by changing the rules." And then very recently, I think in this year, the governor at a governor's conference in Washington, D.C., made a statement pertaining to national energy policies. And he said the United States should provide tax incentives for domestic oil and gas exploration. And that seems rather ironic, while at the same time, the governor is actively involved in removing those tax incentives for oil and gas exploration right here in Alaska. So, Mr. Speaker, I think we need to look past the short-sighted goals, the biased perspectives, and the double talk, and defend the economic future and the well-being of our state and of all Alaskans by defeating this bill.
Mr. Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think that the body should also go back and look at some of the comments that, or some of the arguments that were made when ELF was initially contemplated. Many of the arguments today were talking about wiping out incentives for development. Oil will be left in the ground. Jobs will be lost. And I think it would be a good perspective for this body to go back and look at some of the comments that were made 12 years ago in 1977 as this body was deliberating the ELF issue. Larry Bavar, spokesman for Union Oil, Fairbanks Daily News Miner, April 22, 1977. The ELF is too complicated, unrealistic, and fails to allow for reasonable operating costs. I guess many of us would wonder with a statement like that 12 years later how the unreasonable operating costs could have resulted in $42 billion in profit. Another statement from the Anchorage Daily Times, March 19, 1977, Monty Taylor of Exxon USA. If it is adopted, the ELF, Alaska will tip the scales against future development. And I think that, again, we go back and look at the profits that have been made by the oil companies. A third statement from the Fairbanks News Miner, March 25, 1977, Richard Donaldson, Standard Alaska, Company of Ohio. The proposed ELF legislation would wipe out any remaining incentives for future development in Alaska. And the final one, I guess, the Alaskan Advocate, April 21st, 1977, by Richard Donaldson again. The tax bills would subsidize standard, make subsidy fields in Prudhoe Bay impossible to produce. And I think that these, the body should go back and look at many of the arguments that were made against the ELF 12 years ago are some of the same arguments that are being made today. And I don't think that as we look back that history would prove that those statements were true. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Jacko.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I've been listening to the, debate, there's been quite a lot of talk on profits, and every time the opponents of this piece of legislation allude to the fact that the advocates of it, such as myself, are view profits as evil, I kind of fidget in my seat. As a small business person, a fisherman, I've spent most of my life pursuing profits. I think profits are great. Matter of fact, that's why I'm voting for this particular piece of legislation. I consider myself a shareholder in the state of Alaska, and I represent shareholders in the state of Alaska and shareholders in this particular resource. And as a shareholder and as a prudent shareholder, I think that it's only right that we pursue our fair share. I don't have any problems with the oil companies pursuing their profits, but I think as shareholders, we need to watch out for our percentage of the profit, and that's why I'm supporting this piece of legislation, because as a shareholder, I think that we need to get our fair share out of this, and that's why I'm pursuing it. Not that I want the point to be made that I don't have anything against profits. I think they're great. That's why I'm voting for the bill.
Mr. Lehman.
Mr. Speaker, on January 23rd, if you recall, I addressed this body under special orders and reported on the results of a constituent meeting I had. that time, 45 constituents unanimously said, we need to look first to reduce spending before raising taxes. I reported that to the body and suggested that maybe we weren't as serious as we should be with some of our priorities, and I was assured then, as I may be later today, by my good friend, the majority leader, that indeed the majority is serious about reducing spending. But, Mr. Speaker, I suggest that our actions may speak louder than our words. In that time, since January 23rd, we have approved new programs, boards, and commissions, and I have yet to see where we have cut any spending. I know that we're working on it, but, Mr. Speaker, we're doing just the opposite. We're increasing taxes first before we're cutting spending. In my opinion, that's the wrong direction to be taking. It's certainly the wrong priority. I have some questions that perhaps the bill manager can answer or somebody else can answer. The first one is, why not wait on this until after the March 28th new revenue projections? Why have we rushed this to the floor? Certainly before each one of us has had time to review the documentation from committee. I'm not aware that very many people have had the opportunity to do it. The fine representative from Kodiak exhibited the documentation, which was the first time I had seen that in that particular form. Fortunately, I attended some of the meetings, and I have some of the documentation, but I don't know that each one of us has had the opportunity to consider the record, as he suggested we should, and I agree that we should. The third question, or the third point, is one that the representative from Kodiak also made, and he said that we should consider this issue on its own merit, not on its value as trading stock. Mr. Speaker, while I certainly don't want to question why people vote the way they do and how they vote, I certainly endorse that and suggest that each of us should consider this issue on its own merit, not in its value as trading stock. I direct your attention to a gold handout that was on your desk when you arrived today. I thought it probably says what I'm trying to say probably better than I can say. And it suggests that perhaps we should be looking first at spending reductions. Then if we need tax increases, let's approach it at that time. I'd like to address, Mr. Speaker, if I may, some comments that were made about the formula. The formula is complex. It takes a while to work yourself through it. And the representative from Kodiak suggested that comments made about the formula were a red herring, made to obfuscate the debate. I suggest, Mr. Speaker, that that's not the case. Instead, the formula does have room in there for a difference of opinion on which order you take the exponent. And I've worked through the numbers. Either one will work, but they produce different results. I just find the argument far more compelling that someone in deriving the formula picked an arbitrary limit of 150,000 barrels a day as the limit in the first part of what this bill is doing, that is changing the formula. I find that far more compelling than in them saying that we picked as an arbitrary limit 113,507 barrels. And I think you would agree with me, and probably most of the people here. I know that there are other elements to the change encompassed in this bill. There's the deletion of the rounding rule, and then there's also the deletion of those portions that address the rebutting of the 300 barrel a day limit. These all enter into and complex the issue. But I suggest, Mr. Speaker, that these are some real concerns in looking through the formula. By just changing where two parentheses are located, we can create what I think is probably a better formula, certainly one that I think would address the issue we're trying to address better than the existing formula does. However, you know, this is not, I don't think this has been considered adequately by the body. Other comments that were made on ELF, that this would improve production in marginal fields, that's correct. But what we need to do is sort out marginal projects in existing fields from marginal fields. The representative from Juneau, who has already spoken, mentioned that only two of the fields will have changes as a result of this bill. Well, that's correct. But may I remind you that 90% plus of our production is contained in those two fields. So we can use the same statistics and show that more than 90% of the oil produced in the state is going to be affected by this bill. And I suggest, Mr. Speaker, that marginal projects within existing fields are also vitally important to overall production of income and oil to the state of Alaska. I was heartened when the majority leader, in one of the follow-up times when he addressed us, corrected an earlier statement when he said that drilling more wells would increase the ELF and therefore reduce our tax burden. It instead, indeed, as you corrected your statement, reduces the ELF and reduces the tax burden. However, the incentive is really one that once we've increased the taxes, then the incentive is there to do more investigation, to drill more wells. But Mr. Speaker, I suggest that by increasing taxes, we are reducing the incentive by that very action. So in conclusion, Mr. Speaker, I plan to vote against this bill, and I also am a longtime Alaskan. I have a deep interest in the state, as do each of you. And I believe that we optimize our return by being kind to business, by establishing an appropriate, stable tax policy. And I would much rather see us reduce our spending, make a very significant effort at reducing spending before we're looking at increasing taxes.
Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sitting here today is kind of like deja vu. This is my fifth year in the legislature, and it seems that every year around spring we have this ELF argument. And over the last 5 years, I probably read, like the members in the body have, just about everything that's been printed about the issue. I've heard just about everything that could be said about the issue, and I probably thought about just about everything that I've read or heard or has been said about the issue. Earlier, a comment was made and a criticism was made of the campaign, apparently, by the oil industry that utilized some highly respected and people who have departed this earth, who had made some statements. And I was sorry to hear that criticism, because I thought those were some pretty great statements. And I agreed with them all, but I when I thought about it, I thought, well, you know, they did make a mistake. They left out one of the best statements that I've heard really been said about the whole issue, and the person who made that statement is a living, breathing person, so I'm really kind of sorry they overlooked it, and I wanted to make sure that nobody missed out. With the permission of the body, I'd like to read that statement, and it says, "The oil industry is entitled to regulatory and taxation predictability. In addition, increasing taxes at a time of market instability sends the wrong message to the oil and gas community, as well as other resource-based enterprises, which might be operating..."
Mr. Majority Leader, your point of order is well taken. You're not allowed to read letters. Mason's manual is very clear on that. You're not supposed to read a letter from a member who's not a member of this... a person who's not a member of this body.
Mr. Speaker, I was not reading a letter. I was reading a published statement.
That's, I'm interpreting it the same way. So you can certainly paraphrase remarks that other people have made, but we don't allow other people's quotations or letters to be read on the floor of the House. It's very explicit in Mason's manual.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With your permission, I will continue. And I do apologize to the members if I was in error, but I was really reluctant to misquote that statement because I think it's an important one, and it really gets at the heart of the issue. That statement made sense when it was made a couple years ago, and it makes sense today. And that's one of the reasons I'm voting against this bill today, that statement. I'll pass it around so everyone will know who the author is. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader, and I just want to apologize. I didn't mean, and I hate to interrupt people, but Mason's manual is very clear on that point, that you're not to read letters from people who are not members of this body on the floor of the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've heard a number of quotes that have been attributed to, first of all, some highly respected people who are now dead. And the implication is that they obviously support leaving the ELF the way it is. Mr. Speaker, first of all, I don't think any of those people ever considered the ELF, so that the excerpts that were taken out and put in the paper were quoted out of context, and I think that's something that most of us in this body at one time or another have experienced and are not particularly pleased with. I was personally insulted by the use of one of my heroes, John Kennedy, in one of the ads, because I felt that it was totally inappropriate to suggest that on this issue and on stable taxations that John Kennedy would have, I guess, frowned upon me had I considered changing the tax policy. I don't think he would have. Mr. Speaker, with respect to the other quotes that have been made about people who in the past may have said, by golly, we ought to leave it the way it is now, and who now may say, you know, I've looked at this again. I've reconsidered. I've looked at this again. And on second glance, by golly, I was wrong. And I think perhaps we ought to change the tax policy. You know, there's nothing wrong with admitting that you've made a mistake, with reconsidering what was perhaps an earlier assessment. In fact, I would submit that we do that all the time in this body. And I think it's one of the great things about this process, and I don't hold it against anybody if they happen to want to reconsider based on information that's available now, and I don't think that any member of this body ought to either.
Representative Pettyjohn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll take up the challenge of the Majority Leader, and I'll reconsider my opposition to this bill if some of the statements that have been made on this floor can be proven, because I think the state has had a tax policy for some time. And the policy is, it's been alluded to several times, is that the oil production, the wealth created by oil production, the state's going to get at least 30%. That was the understanding, as I have been told by some of the participants, including Jay Hammond himself, that took place in 1981. I've heard statements that the state of Alaska is getting less than 30% right now. The oil industry is getting far more. If those are true, if that's a fact, if that can be shown, that the state of Alaska is getting less than 30% of the wealth produced at Prudhoe Bay, I'll vote to increase taxes on the oil industry. I won't necessarily vote for this bill, because this bill, I think, is counterproductive in terms of leaving oil on the ground. But I think the state gets at least 30%. And if you can show me that we're not, I will vote to increase taxes on the oil industry. I handed something out. This is a document that is taken basically from the information on page 7 of the Deakin Report. Now, I don't think the Deakin Report is necessarily the document I would use in making this calculation, but let's just use it. It's at the request of proponents of this bill. And according to the calculations from page 7, in 87 we got 41.8%. In 86 we got 55.7%. Now, if we got less than 30%, if this is wrong, I would like to be told it was wrong, because I'm willing to vote. I'm willing to change my mind on issues.
But I don't think this is wrong. Before we take final action on this legislation, I would like to know whether if these in fact are wrong. And if some of the other statements have been made on, the representative from Fairbanks, I think, alluded to something. If he's right, I'll take another look at it. I must admit, I was a little taken aback at one of his statements regarding how the oil companies are being subsidized. That's a new use of the term subsidy for me, when someone is allowed to take a percentage of their profits. That's considered a subsidy. I think private enterprise advocates around the state quivered a little when we heard that one. But be that as it may. Mr. Speaker, I'm not going to go much further on this, but to me, this issue is a very big issue, and it's not just because of the revenue involved, and it's not just because of the oil industry. It's because the future of this state and the hope that I have that my children will be able to stay here and work here and raise their families here. And a lot of, as you may know from some of your friends or colleagues or your own family, there are a lot of people leaving Alaska, a lot of young people that were born here, that grew up here, that have been educated here. They can't find a job here. There's nothing for them to do. The economy of this state, at least in the rail belt, is in a shambles. And how are we going to get it back on track? What's the future of Alaska? The future of Alaska is not being the Hong Kong of the North. It's not in heavy industry. It's not even in light industry. The future of Alaska is its resources and developing those resources. And how do you develop those resources? I'm repeating myself from arguments I made 2 or 3 years ago on the same subject. But basically, you got to get people to invest in Alaska. And the investments are going to come from outside. And the people that are going to invest up here are going to want a return on their investment. And when I hear about, oh my God, there's billions of dollars that are leaving the state. This is terrible. How can we allow these people to take money out of Alaska? Well, how do you expect people to invest in Alaska without an expectation that they'll get it back and at a profit? That's the way the world works. If you want to discourage something, tax it. And we're discouraging production of oil with this bill. Thank you.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I would like to go back to the debate of the leader of the mini-minority. Mr. Speaker, while I don't have before me the exact quotes of the governor of the state of Alaska when he chaired the Finance Committee in 1977, and the debate on the ELF was taking place at that time, he was one of the biggest proponents of enacting the ELF, and he said something to the effect that by instituting the ELF at that time, that in fact would lead to giving an incentive for the oil and gas companies to drill more wells that were marginally profitable in the state of Alaska. Again, I apologize up front if the quote is not exact, but the essence is the same. The other quote that the mini-minority leader attempted to address on this floor was that made in the 86 election campaign by now the governor of the state of Alaska. And he said at that time that he would be a proponent of leaving the oil and gas taxes as they are, that he believed that the industry had every right to a stable tax policy. Mr. Speaker, I suggest to you that with the event of the campaign that the governor of the state of Alaska has carried on as it relates to this issue, that he speaketh out of both sides of his mouth. Now, Mr. Speaker, I would like to go back to 1989. Excuse me. I would like to go back to 1981. And why we got into the discussion of the ELF at that time. I believe that...
Representative Barnes, I would try to encourage you to keep your remarks toward the issue and not to bringing personalities into the debate.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do believe that I was discussing the issue and that I was not discussing a personality, that it did not relate to the issue. The issue before us is a piece of legislation relating to the ELF. I attempted to the best of my ability to quote the chief executive of the state. And I find it hard to understand how you can on one hand one day be a proponent of one thing and be a proponent of something exactly different on another day. Now, Mr. Speaker, in 1981, we had before us an issue of whether or not the state would be sued on separate accounting. And that, Mr. Speaker, related to how much money that we would have to pay back to the oil companies that we had derived from them in the form of severance tax, should they, in fact, win in court. Mr. Speaker, if memory serves me correctly, at that time we were talking about in the neighborhood of $2 billion. There were at least two tax cases pending in court that led the state of Alaska to believe that we would certainly lose the argument in court, and we were looking for a way to save our backside. Thus, we made a deal with the oil companies as it relates to rewriting the tax policy of the state of Alaska and guaranteeing to them some future stability as it related to the development of oil and gas presently in the ground. Now, Mr. Speaker, at that time there was a joint meeting by the House, the Senate, and the chief executive at that time being Governor Hammond, and it was agreed and understood that it was believed that the state should always receive no less than 30%, and hopefully that we would maintain 33 1/3% of oil revenues. And it has been said before on this House floor today that at that time the consideration was given to the oil companies, the federal IRS, and to the state of Alaska, which was fair. I submit to you that, Mr. Speaker, prior to this time, no one in this body can show me where the state revenue has dropped to below 30% as it relates from the deriving of oil and gas taxes. Mr. Speaker, what is fair, and what is wrong, and I suggest that each time that we go back and we try to reap our windfall profits after we have sold the leases, and we did, we sold our revenue, our oil, in the form of leases in 1974, I believe. Memory serves me correctly, we were paid $900 million. Now, I could be wrong, Mr. Speaker, but that seems to be the figure I remember. And in addition to selling those leases, we also have our royalty share. Royalty share that we did not, with our dollars, produce, that the oil companies produced, Mr. Speaker. Allow me to suggest to you that, Mr. Speaker, not only have we gotten our royalty share, which in many instances, it is my belief, has been mismanaged, but in addition, Mr. Speaker, we have gotten taxes from the oil companies that has contributed to between 85 and 90% of our state budget ever since. We are fortunate among states, fortunate that we were able to save a permanent fund with an excess of $10 billion. We are fortunate to be able to give permanent fund dividend. We are fortunate not to have to tax our people in the form of a personal income tax. I believe, Mr. Speaker, you were here when we had that debate. And I am proud that I was one of the ones that could support the repeal of the personal income tax. But I believe in what is fair and what is right. And I do not believe that the bill we have before us is fair or right. Thank you for my second opportunity to speak, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Speaker, I just want to make one more comment with respect to a deal that was made in 1981. First of all, in 1981, the changes that took place was change in separate accounting in order to remove some of the liability that we had. It was $2 billion approximately at the time, and I don't know what the deal was, but as I remember, that case was taken all the way to the Supreme Court before it was decided in the state's favor. That doesn't seem to be much of a deal on our part. And with respect to whether or not we can change this tax or whether there was a deal made in 1981, Mr. Speaker, Article 9, Section 1, taxing power of the Constitution, states that the power of taxation shall never be surrendered. The power shall not be suspended or contracted away except as provided in this article. Mr. Speaker, any deal that was made in 1981, and I have yet to discover whether or not there was any deal, and I've researched it, if there was some kind of a deal made by people who were in that body at that time, it was an unconstitutional deal based on Article 9. Second of all, Mr. Speaker, we have a responsibility as legislators to consider in this body what is in the best interest of the state and its citizens at this time, not rely on deals that may have been made in the past. Nobody likes a bad deal.
Mr. Hudson, you haven't had the floor yet. By the way, I'm going to place a call on the House at this point. There are two members that are missing. Mr. Hudson, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to add sort of a measure of reason to the debate here and to share with the folks here some of the judgmental calls and some of the factors concerning my judgment on this bill, because we're all being asked to pass our judgment on this specific bill as it will affect the state of Alaska and the value of revenue in our state, I think, for many, many years to come, as well as the ability to attract business in Alaska. I also sat through, I think with about 9 or 10 other legislators, 30 hours of hearings in the House Resources Committee. And I heard data on both sides that were in conflict with each other. I heard data manipulated on both sides to try to develop a point. I think that in many cases we were led astray by conflicting statements. And the bottom line, as I see it at any rate, is that we have a very situation now, and we've had it for quite a number of years. And the administration and some of us at any rate are coming forward and saying it's time to review it. And I don't find any problem with that. I think we have every right to review our tax laws. I think there are tax policies out there, and they're embodied in many other separate and associate policies. But collectively, they make up our body of tax policies. As I said before, I sat through about 30 hours of hearing on this thing. I tried to work through the formula, and quite frankly, never was quite able to get all the way through it. I heard both sides try to tell us how that formula was going to apply and what the value was going to be to the state of Alaska and to the oil industry. And quite frankly, I think you can work it both ways. Although I couldn't work it myself, but I believe that I understand how it's going to work. The intent of House Bill 118 is to encourage truly marginal fields or projects. And as the governor has said in the videotape, which I watched twice, incidentally, and in addition to 30 hours sitting into this committee, I think I've put at least 30 hours in going through reams and stacks of testimony and information. But the idea was to close a loophole, and particularly the loophole benefiting Prudhoe Bay and Kuparuk. And the testimony, as I said, ranged far and wide and straight away in many cases from the efforts of the bill. There were efforts, for example, to equate Alaska's tax policy with Nigeria and with Indonesia and try to show that somehow comparable oil productions produced uncomparable values. The problem is that the production investments that were made in Indonesia, for example, are not made by the state of Alaska in Alaska. The industry made all of the upfront investments in Alaska, whereas in Indonesia, they give back those early investments by oil, and as well as putting some of the investments themselves early on in the income stream back. So it's natural that they're going to have a greater percentage, at least in some stages, of recovery from that oil than we are here in Alaska. So I felt at any rate as though that was a difficult thing to try to work through. We heard a tremendous amount about jobs, and of course we've all heard about profit. In 1 week's testimony, we heard three different prices or values to the industry for a barrel of oil at Prudhoe Bay. It ranged all the way from $1.57 a barrel profit to $2.50 profit. I don't know which is right. We heard several different figures on percentages apportioned to the state versus those that were apportioned to the oil people. And I believe that a lot of our problems in trying to find out what's good tax policy and what isn't here is in determining definitions, because a good tax policy has to understand what it's trying to achieve. The governor says that a marginal fields are fields with relatively low well productivity and relatively low daily production, and therefore Prudhoe Bay at 1.5 million barrels a day and Kuparuk at 320,000 barrels a day are certainly not marginal fields in that accordance. Industry, on the other hand, says that as the field gets down to the point to where it's difficult to maintain the pressure and the maximum productivity and a cost-beneficial recovery, that you have to take into consideration development drilling, gas handling facilities, expansion of an enhanced oil recovery, and that these investments will increase the recoverable reserves both at Prudhoe Bay and at Kuparuk, and that while this bill might lower, and I think it does, the tax on small and therefore emerging and new and hopefully marginal fields, I think that it probably does a disservice to a larger field that should be considered differently, and that's Kuparuk, and I'm going to get down to that. So, Mr. Speaker, I think that some of the provisions in House Bill 118 I found at any rate to be realistic, and I bought off on them. I believe that the provisions that deals to newer and smaller fields was the right thing to do, and I applaud the sponsors for putting that in the bill. I also found from my reviewing reams of materials concerning profitability and the percentage of that profitability that should be shared with the state of Alaska to be somewhat convincing in Prudhoe Bay. Now, I don't know how much, because once again, you almost have to be a mathematician, an oil engineer, oil field engineer, and we heard from a lot of those kind of people. So I think that probably some modifications to this ELF as applies to Prudhoe Bay was a realistic thing. However, I'm convinced that the consideration of rolling in or all-inclusive, adding Kuparuk into this whole issue, flaws the bill. And I've mentioned that at the committee hearings. I think the committee chairman will remember loud and clear that I kept asking for what's the risk of leaving oil in the ground. Well, I called in the administration to come into my office as late as last Friday and say, you know, answer some of these questions for me if you can. They showed me long runs of models to try to convince me, I think, that there would be relatively little oil that would be left in the ground. Therefore, the best interest would be by increasing the tax and getting on with the business here. On the other hand, in talking to industry, for example, I believe one of the figures was that, well, we've run it on out here, and we believe there might be as much as 100 to 150 million barrels of oil that would be left in the ground. Industry, for example, Kuparuk alone, I think it was Mr. Odom, said that it could conceivably, at Kuparuk alone, leave a half a billion, 500 million barrels of oil in the ground. So there we have it. We have the administration say, sure, there's going to be some oil left in the ground, and that's lost royalty and tax on, say, 100 million barrels of fuel is $35 million to the state of Alaska, $14 million which goes into the permanent fund. So we're looking at both at those two revenue streams as well. So generally speaking, Mr. Speaker, I think that the bill that we have here is flawed in its dealing with Kuparuk, and to some extent even in how it addresses the Prudhoe Bay field, although I think that there's clearly work that we should do there in trying to recover some of those profits. I would like to see this bill, as I've said before, go back into the committee and modify this so that we can come back out, capture the maximum amount of barrels from the ground. That's to Alaska's best interest. Be fair and equitable, show that we're concerned about economic development. You know, I've got mining going on around here. Those people are looking at this whole thing and wondering whether or not something like this might just suddenly turn up when they get to be profitable, and that's a concern to me too. So I think we in Alaska must be careful that we look at all revenue recoveries in issues such as this. We can take $1 billion, which some folks say is about the value of the ELF, and leave $3 billion worth of oil in the ground to Alaska. And I think that's where our value judgment has to come down. And I say that mine has been difficult because of the conflict information and because we've not got right down to that kind of information. I think we should do that and then bring this back up, and if it's right and reasonable, I'll certainly vote for it. As it is at the present time, I cannot vote for House Bill 118 in its present form.
Other members have spoken. Mr. Martin?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I do have a major question that's been burning since last yesterday, when I missed the opportunity for amendment, and I know we're in third reading, I checked it with the majority leader, but I would like to have some explanation as to why the Resource Committee felt it necessary in Section 4 and 5 of our bill to make this a retroactive or an ex post facto, for all practical purposes, a tax on an industry. And I'm saying an industry or anybody, because I really think it's in conflict with the constitutional intent of our founding fathers. Now, you probably have a description there, because in one way you can interpret that the ex post facto law here has to do with criminal laws and things like that. But it also says in the second section up there that the important thing is to be careful that no law impairing an obligation of contracts. And I was wondering if the Resource Committee has asked the oil industry or even subsidiaries of oil industries, if we back this tax to the first of this year, how is that going to hurt you in your obligations with contracts that are ongoing? Because, you know, when you charge any companies, and even if you say the oil industry is a big company, $100 million, they had to do a lot of adjustments within their marketability, within their sales, within their production, with putting people to work or cutting them off of work. That's the same problem that we're facing if we should cut our budget by $100 million or $200 million. We have to lay off people. So certainly, if we want this money so we can keep people working, then you must say they're going to lose that money and put people out of work, out of jobs. So is there a question, have we discussed it, that retroactively we can get away with this, but is that good policy and put more private citizens out of work just so the companies can readjust themselves? Also, if we're going to use this as a formula for the future, a couple of gentlemen brought that up here, that would we retroactively do other things like the mining tax? Why not say, hey, we're not getting enough out of you guys over here at Gold Creek, so we're going to retroactively tax you for the past year. Personal income tax. The average citizens have been doing very well, and that's nice. That's a kind of a permanent fund dividend that we don't look at. I wish more citizens would do that. Every week you receive your paycheck, see zero on the state tax. And when you question if you're getting anything from the oil street, industry, that's what you're getting, probably 30% savings in your personal income. But see, what I'm trying to say is that if we leave that in, if it's really necessary to leave that in the bill, we are giving a very bad message to many industries. Whether we knew that fishing tax that the gentleman in front of me almost encouraged me to do, and should I make that retroactive, the mining tax? What about the gross business taxes that we repealed and to help small business, and it had been a good inducer to them? Should we retroactively impose a tax on them? So I think we're setting a very bad precedent. I would like to have the majority convince me that that is necessary, or should we delete it now? Because we have the Section 5 that says, in case it is challenged, will go to court. Well, I think we got three or four cases in court now pertaining to oil taxes, and we're paying millions and millions and millions. The lawyers love it. We're not getting anything to solve, but $6 more million here, $3 more million there, $6 more million here to solve these cases that some of them have been going on for 10 years. So we're going to lose everything we gain in this new tax retroactively just through the lawyer and the cost. I'd like to be convinced those two sections are needed. Thank you.
Mr. Davidson?
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think the answer to the burning desire is easy. It's called a bonfire of $1 billion of lost state revenue since 1981. And the fact that it is retroactive is an attempt to regain some of that lost revenue that belongs, in my judgment, to the state of Alaska and the citizens who call this great state their home. There is, in fact, in federal case law, a precedent for retroactivity of tax rates or issues. So I'd be happy to allow the good friend, the representative from East Anchorage, full access to this book or any other representative who so chooses. And many of the answers are there in that book. He brought up another question that I don't have answer for, and I think deserves a good answer, and that is, why so much tax litigation? Well, I don't know, but it seems to me that when you're talking anywhere from $1 billion to $4 billion, it's money that's not only eaten up by legal fees, but when it leaves payment behind schedule in the state effort to operate schools for kids as well as other people programs, we need an answer for it quickly.
Mr. Minority Leader?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just briefly to the previous speaker, the ELF only kicked in a year or so ago, and his computations concerning $1 billion and having a bonfire with it, I don't believe is appropriate. I think if he, maybe what he's referring to is $1 billion off into the future, but certainly not in the last year or year and a half. I would like to address also the question of retroactivity raised by the speaker before that, and I think it is important for us to consider. I realize that legal opinions have been rendered concerning whether or not this body can impose a new tax law and make that tax law retroactively effective back to January 1st, which is what the substance of the bill is and provides for, I believe, in sections 4 and 5. Let me put the analogy maybe in a way that brings it closer to home for all of us. Most of us in this room rent an apartment here in Juneau for 4 months or more during the legislative session. How would each one of us feel if just as we went to leave our apartments and head back home in May, our landlord showed up at the door and he says, by the way, I've retroactively decided that the rent on your apartment is now $200 more per month. Why, you'd scream like a gut-shot cougar, wouldn't you?
A what?
You'd say, what do you mean? I had a contract with you. I had an agreement with you. I'd pay you so many dollars a month rent. What do you mean you're going to charge me now for 4 months backwards? You can't do that. That's what we would say, wouldn't we? And then you'd say, I also cleaned up the kitchen and I want my damage deposit back, right? I'm leaving town. Technically and legally, we can do this. We can retroactively go back and tell these people, you have to pay a tax that you didn't even know was coming January 1. You went and made expenditures in your business and things kept rolling along. And sure, you didn't know that whether this was going to happen or not, but you knew our governor wanted it, so you should have been suspicious and kept some money back. But now we've imposed it and it jumps backwards on you this number of months. Technically and legally, we can get away with it. But morally, I think that type of taxing policy would be just as reprehensible to those people as if our landlord said, now you owe $200 more rent for the last 6 months that you've been staying in this apartment. That's what retroactivity is, and that's the unfairness of it. That's why I think the point made by the former speaker is a very good one. That's why, if you'll remember yesterday, Mr. Speaker, I asked that we remove this bill, put it back into committee for the purpose, basically, of removing those two provisions about retroactivity. When that was turned down, I at least asked that we contemplate instead operating on the original bill that was brought before this body, which did not contain those two retroactive provisions, and that we go with that bill as opposed to the one that's currently before us, the resources bill. Since those two things have not occurred, I think that, and we have not had an answer yet as to the legality of the retroactivity, I think it still is an issue that needs to be, the body needs to be informed of.
Are you ready for the question, Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With regard to whether or not the retroactivity clause is constitutional, I think Minority Leader is an attorney, and he did say that legally and technically we can do it. I think that's his assessment as an attorney, and that's also the assessment of RAG, Legislative Legal Services, and a private attorney that has been on contract with the state. So I think that legally, yes, we can do it. As for what justification we have for doing it, Mr. Speaker, the ELF loophole kicked in 1987, July of 1987, and $200 million plus has been left. Now, we've considered this question before, and the industry knew we were considering it. And the difference between it and rent and other taxes is that if your landlord had come to you and said, I might be increasing my tax by or my your rent by $200 a month, and I'll let you know in a couple months, that'd cause you some concern, and you'd worry about it. But you would be aware of it, and it might cause you to negotiate a little more effectively with them on that case, but you would be aware of it. It's not something that the industry has been unaware of, and already the state has lost. If you look at this share of the loophole and what it means since July until January of this year, it was $200 million. If we extend it to the effective date of the bill, whenever that might be, it would. If we extended it to July 1, that would be an additional $50 million. So when you look at who's getting the benefit of it, the industry has gotten $200 million of it, and under this, the state will get $50 million of it. That's the justification.
You ready for the question?
I'd like a brief at ease.
We'll stand at ease. The House, please come back to order. Mr. Sharp, you haven't had the floor yet.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have just today received several messages from my hometown and constituents there of Fairbanks asking for a delay of 1 or 2 days on this vote. There are factors developing today that they feel that this delay could be critical to many Alaskans. In consideration of this request, I offer the following motion. I move and ask unanimous consent that HB 118 be held in third reading for one legislative day. Mr. Speaker, I'm asking my colleagues to extend me and my constituents this consideration. Thank you.
I'll stand at ease for a moment. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would note to the representative from Fairbanks that reconsideration is available today, which would mean that the question would be considered again tomorrow.
Ready for the question? Do you have debate on this motion?
Mr. Speaker, a consideration to the motion, if I may. The same kind that was given to the majority leader.
I'm going to allow you about two sentences, Representative Barnes, and we're going to vote on it. It's not a debatable motion.
I understand, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, while it is true that this bill can be put under reconsideration, I believe I heard the representative from Fairbanks ask for 2 days. That would take holding it this legislative day plus the reconsideration to give him the 2 days. I don't feel that's an unreasonable request.
Chris, ready for the question? The question, this motion is not debatable. Mr. Boucher, do you wish the floor?
Question of the chair. Is this a procedural motion, sir?
Yes.
Point of order.
Mr. Minority Leader, what's your point of order?
My point of order is, had you ruled, Mr. Speaker, that the motion was out of order, I think it would then definitely be a procedural motion. It is not a procedural motion as a matter of dictate to the rest of this.
Point of order.
Mr. Galls, take your point of order.
Mr. Speaker, you answered a question from a member. There isn't a motion on the floor regarding appealing the judgment of the chair.
The motion is certainly in order. It takes 21 votes to hold it over. Is there, and there's, it's not a debatable motion, so I would ask members to hold their debate unless they rise on a point of order.
Mr. Speaker, I do have a question.
What's your point of order, Mr. Lehman?
I have a question that I'd like to ask.
You have a parliamentary inquiry, Aaron? Go ahead and ask the question.
No, I just have a question. It's not a parliamentary inquiry that will aid me in deciding how to vote on this.
This is not a debatable motion, so if you intend to debate the motion, then it will be ruled out of order.
I don't intend to debate the motion.
All right, so we permit you to ask a question then.
Okay, the question I have, I'd like to direct to the representative from Kodiak. If we do hold this for 1 day, would we be able to have the support documentation that he alluded to distributed to us to review during...
Mr. Lehman, you're out of order.
Speaker.
Representative Collins.
Just have a brief at ease.
We'll be at ease. House, please come back to order.
Mr. Speaker, could we have a brief at ease?
We're back at ease. Back to order. The chair has been reminded of Section 369 of Mason's Manual that discusses limited debate permission on a motion to postpone indefinitely, which is the motion that's before us today. And I stand corrected. There is an opportunity to debate this motion. However, the theory upon which debate on the question postponed is prohibited is that the effect of the motion is merely to defer debate on the question. The purpose of the motion would be entirely lost if discussion of the merits of the bill were permitted at this stage. So we won't discuss the merits of the bill, but you can discuss postponement as long as you don't discuss the merits of the bill. So I stand corrected. Is there debate on the postponement? Mr. Boucher?
Well, I hope I'm in order, and if I'm not, I'm sure you'll rule me out, sir. Further to the representative from Fairbanks' remarks, there have been efforts ongoing because part of the economics of our industry is not just how many tax dollars we can get in our state treasury, but how many people we can put to work. And I think that you know there has been pro and con and debate on the Alaska Hire issue. And I'll get right to the point. There is some progress being made. There's some progress being made today as we're on the floor. And the individual who has spoke to a number of us is one who has been on the line for us over the years,
and he is working hard to see that Alaskans go to work on these expanded fields. And I would find it difficult not to honor his request, sir. I think that's really what it's all about, is there an opportunity here to put additional Alaskans to work? Now, you've indicated earlier, sir, that it was a procedural vote. If such is the case, and that is your ruling, I, as a member of the majority, although I haven't always in the past, I will abide by that. But I would ask this body to give consideration to the request that has been made by the representative from Fairbanks constituent. Thank you, sir.
You stand at ease for one more moment. House, please come back to order. The question for the House is whether or not to postpone till tomorrow. And earlier the question was raised as to whether or not that was a procedural vote. And I guess it's a close question. I earlier said that it was a procedural vote. And if people feel that they are not able to vote their conscience on this issue as a result of being forced into a procedural vote, I would say then that it is not a procedural vote. So that people would have the clear ability to vote how they see fit on this issue. So, Mr. Minority Leader? Yes,
thank you for that clarification. If I might ask just for another further clarification, Mr. Speaker, I believe originally you had indicated that the substance of the vote was now to move to an indefinite period, and I think you were referring to the Mason's Manual. It's my understanding he's only requested a one-day extension till tomorrow. And that's the question.
That is the motion, to postpone until tomorrow's calendar.
Right. Thank you.
Mr. Grunberg, we're at ease. Say, Mike. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would argue against extending an extra day. First of all, reconsideration is available today, which would mean that the bill would come up on Wednesday. Also, after Wednesday's vote, however it may turn out, rescinding action is available as long as the bill is in this body, and that would be at your discretion, Mr. Speaker. I think that it's an unnecessary delay, and I think we should decide the question.
Okay. We aren't going to go all day on this, right? Mr. Minority Leader.
What we have here today is a request by a member for basically the personal privilege to ask this body to please give him the consideration of one additional day. If we were talking about an airplane flight leaving town, it was the only one available, that'd be a different subject. We're not. We've got plenty of time to discuss this matter, and we're talking a serious question here, and I think we ought to at least afford him that courtesy. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? Mr. Schultz. Mr. Schultz, you have the floor.
Just a question to the chair. Let's just say, for example, on this vote that the bill stays before us, if we vote on it. The question that I'm wondering, if there are other developments that would happen, and there would be some requests that would come from some of the people that are presently in negotiations with working up at Prudhoe and some of the oil fields. Would the chair hold the bill over if that would happen to a day certain? Would that be a consideration that you would give? No.
I'd remind members to debate the bill and the whole question on the merits of the issue, and I think we're departing from that somewhat by hoping that somebody else will be able to make a deal someplace. Are we ready for the question? The question before the House is, shall House Bill number 118 be held over to a definite date, that being tomorrow's calendar? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
18 yeas, 22 nays.
Motion fails. The bill is before you in third reading. Are you ready for the question? The question before the House is, shall committee substitute for House Bill number 118, Resources, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll. Mr. Zawacki, do you wish to change your vote?
Yes, I do. Yea to nay?
I don't.
From yea to nay, Mr. Zawacki, change your vote.
Did it change?
Mr. Zawacki's changed his vote from yes to no. Does any other member wish to change their vote? Mr. Foster?
From no to yes.
Mr. Foster changes from no to yes. Do the other members wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
21 yeas, 19 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 118, Resources, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader?
Move the effective date clause.
Motion is to the adoption of the effective date. It takes 27 votes. Members may proceed. The question before the House is, shall the effective date pass? Mr. Martin.
Mr. Speaker, on the effective date, I did object. I'd like to, again, because we have no written comment, and I would like to see it, the justification that the attorneys, wherever they may be coming from, have on us to, in my mind, circumvent the intent of the Constitution by a retroactive tax. If that is available, I would appreciate having it. Otherwise, I will vote against the date.
Mr. Majority Leader?
We have a brief at ease. Yeah.
You can just announce it. To order, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is a written opinion from Jack Chenoweth, Legislative Council, and I'll provide that to the minority member.
Question before the House is, shall the effective date pass? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
25 yeas, 15 nays.
The effective date has not passed. The clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar. Mr. Zawacki.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I serve notice of my reconsideration on committee substitute for House Bill 118.
Reconsideration notice has been given on House Bill number 118. It will be available tomorrow.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hanley.
Mr. Speaker, at this time I'd like to bring up reconsideration of committee substitute for House Bill 36, Finance.
House Bill number 36, Finance, is before you in third reading on reconsideration. Clerk, please read the bill in third reading.
Committee substitute for House Bill 36, Finance, amended by the Finance Committee, enacting new crimes, the rights, entitlements, and services that are due to victims of crime and to service of process on prisoners, redefining the term crime against a person, and amending Rules 32 and 35 of the Alaska Rules of Criminal Procedure.
Mr. Gall.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Before we engage in debate on this bill, would you care to go back to announcements so that the committees which were intended to meet an hour ago can announce?
Motion to return to announcements. Is there objection? Motion to stand at ease takes precedence. We are at ease. Please come back to order. We were under announcements. Apparently, there are no announcements.
Right. I withdraw my motions.
We're back to the daily order of business on the daily calendar. The clerk has read House Bill number 36 in third reading under reconsideration. Is there discussion? Are you ready for the question? Representative Hanley.
Mr. Speaker, I would move and ask unanimous consent that the letter from the Department of Law dated March 20th, 1989 to the Representative Dave Donnelly be spread upon the journal.
I object. I want to hear why.
Mr. Speaker, we had a debate on this bill, and I think this letter explained that the amendment that was offered one day from the representative from Muldoon and then the amendment that I offered were not necessary. And I think that perhaps for purposes of intent, for purposes of clarification, I think this letter designates or pretty much lays out the reasoning why the amendments were not necessary. And I would like to have that part of the record. This was the argument used by the majority in saying that the amendment that I offered and the one that Representative from Muldoon offered were not necessary.
Right. I remove my objection. I assume that means you aren't going to offer an amendment then.
That's true, Mr. Yes. Speaker.
Is there other objection to spreading the letter from the Department of Law in the Journal? Hearing no objection, so ordered. Question, are you ready for the question? Question before the House is, shall committee substitute for House Bill number 36, Finance, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please take the roll or lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
38 yeas, no nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill number 36, Finance, has passed the House upon reconsideration. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't have the bill in front of me, so I'll have to get a copy for the...
Stand at ease for just a moment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move that the roll call vote on final passage be considered the roll call vote on the rule changes to Rule 32 and 35 Alaska Rules of Criminal Procedure.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, the roll call vote will be considered the roll call on the rule changes. Back to the daily calendar, Mr. Majority Leader.
It has been circulated. I'd like a brief at ease.
House, please come back to order. Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'd like to move a letter of intent for committee substitute House Bill 36, Finance, and I'd like to call the House, please.
The House has been called on the motion to adopt the letter of intent. Does anyone have any other discussion on the letter of intent? Mr. Gall?
I'd like to brief at ease.
We're at ease. Substitute House Bill 36, Finance, has been offered. Is there objection to adopting the letter of intent? Has the call been satisfied? Is the call now satisfied? The call has been satisfied. Do I hear an objection to the adoption of the letter of intent? There is an objection. Mr. Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday we've heard a lot of concern about the amendment that would offer, and 90% of the objections said that we were already covered, and the adequate opposing point of view was brought through very strongly that perhaps the answer is a letter of intent to clarify what the legislation means in the victim of crimes. So with that understanding of a letter of intent to clarify it, that's why we were presenting this today, so that in later records, and most of us getting more and more concerned with court cases and so on, what did the legislators mean by this and what did the legislators mean by that? So in order to give up our rights of time to amend it again, we thought it'd be best to go along with the majority thinking and allow a letter of intent to clarify what we mean. Thank you.
Is there objection maintained? There is objection. Sorry, are we ready to vote? The question before the House is, shall the House adopt the letter of intent for committee substitute House Bill 36, Finance? Members may proceed to vote. Does any member fail to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, Mr. Kopanen? Mr. Kopanen changes from yes to no. Do other members wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
35 yeas, 5 nays.
House has adopted a letter of intent for committee substitute for House Bill number 36, Finance, while the bill is under reconsideration. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Joint Resolution Number 11 by Brown and Gall relating to congressional reauthorization of the Clean Air Act. The Transportation Committee has considered the bill a resolution and recommends it be replaced with a Transportation Committee substitute with the same title and due pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Cato Chairman, concurring Hudson, Foster, Cato, and Lehman. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Transportation Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution be Resolution 11 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection to the adoption of the Transportation Committee substitute? Hearing no objection, Transportation Committee substitute for HJR 11 has been adopted. Does the clerk have other amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that Transportation Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 11 be considered in gross advance third reading and placed on final passage.
Is there objection to the advancement motion? Hearing no objection, the resolution's in third reading. Would the clerk please read the resolution for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 11, Transportation by the Transportation Committee, relating to congressional reauthorization of the Clean Air Act.
Is there discussion? Ready for the vote? The question before the House is, shall committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 11, Transportation, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change their vote? Clerk, please take the roll.
36 yeas, 4 nays.
Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution Number 11, Transportation, has passed the House. Brings us to unfinished business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have one request for excused absence. I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Zawacki be excused from 5 p.m. Thursday, March 23rd until playing time Tuesday, March 28th.
Is there objection? Hearing no objection, Mr. Zawacki is excused on the dates indicated. Other unfinished business to come before the House? Mr. Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I give notice of reconsideration on my vote on House Bill 91.
Reconsideration notice has been given on House Bill Number 91. Other unfinished business? Are there announcements? Mr. DeSchultz, you seeking the floor? Good luck. Hope you find it. Mr. Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Finance Committee agenda for today will be postponed until tomorrow. So we'll just meet tomorrow at 1:30 and carry on with today's agenda. But the 4 o'clock meeting with the chairman of the subcommittees is still on. Thank you.
Other announcements? Representative Jacko.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Foreign Trade Committee meeting that was scheduled for today will be postponed and rescheduled for tomorrow at 5 o'clock in the State Affairs Committee Room, 102 in the Capitol here. The purpose of the meeting was to hear from Paul Fuse of Unalaska, and he's going to hold over to give us that presentation tomorrow. So appreciate members, as many people could attend as possible. And also, we have an invitation for the City of Unalaska invites you to a legislative reception tonight, Sheffield Room Number 1, Centennial Hall, 5:30 to 7:30. Musical entertainment will be provided by Paul Fuse and City Manager Herb Hensley, and there will be crab and other seafood there, so please attend.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, the Fiscal Policy Subcommittee of House Finance will meet at 8:30 in the morning in the House Finance Room. It'll be a work session.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The basketball game scheduled between the legislature and the governor's office in the Capitol League will be postponed.